You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Ilona Europa, Accent on LA Talk Radio. Hi, Los Angeles. I'm in London, so I have this privilege via Zoom to interview lots of amazing people. Some of them I never met. Some of them I found through a lot of social media interests of mine. Some of them I had a chance to hug sometimes, talk to them, being part of their journey, artistic journey, professional journey. So today is one of the shows. I have with me in my studio, Jessica O'Hara Baker. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
And of course, we need to say how worldly Accent On is. Of course, we are being heard all around the world through Los Angeles Talk Radio, but LA Talk Radio, but obvious, we have social media. So now we are lucky to be seen. If somebody wants to see us, please go to Accent On Radio TV on Facebook and Instagram. Most of my shows, 2 years, I think, right now, I'm posting videos under Ilona Europa, of course. So I'm Polish. I am now in London, 30 years in Los Angeles. I lived many, many years in America. So I'm going back and forth everywhere. You are like intercontinental star too. So let me introduce you officially. Jessica O'Hara Baker is a California-born, New York and Copenhagen-based actor, director, producer, voiceover artist, and you didn't add singer.
I knew you were going to say something about that.
So I will be like saying, why? But on the other hand, if people go to your website, they will see that singing is a part of your career, part of your soul. So in a way, I am the most proud coach in the world, because I had the pleasure to work with you and with your vocals for many years in Los Angeles, in my studio. So seeing you being so successful and going through the journey that was your dream and my dream for you is just beautiful. Jessica, please tell us where you were born, where you were studying, maybe a little bit about your career or dream about becoming a singer, because that was a big part of you too for a few years, and then we'll stop and we say, and big things happen in your life that took you in a way where you are right now. So where you were born?
I was born in Ventura, California, and grew up mostly like in the valley in Ventura area, and met you. Gosh, was I 18 years old or something?
Between 17, 18, because you were applying for college, but I had you already for a few months, I remember working with you. So you probably were 17 going 18.
That's right. Yeah. And I always was a performer. I was always singing and acting and doing theater. And I came to you to start working as a vocal coach. When I was that young.
You didn't change at all. Your face is stuck in my mind and brain. And you know what, seeing you probably around 18, 17 years later, because we didn't see each other for so long, you really look beautiful, young, and it means that you are happy, because most people, I think, who don't change a lot, they have the happy moments in their life written on their faces. So I think you are happy. You are doing what you love to do. So I remember so well this day when you came to me and you said you are applying for a lot of schools, theater schools, and boom, you got this accept to one of the best school in America, if not in the world. Tell us the name of the school.
Yeah, I went to NYU Tisch School of the Arts.
And we are talking out loud, Tisch School. So this is where most of the greatest actors and artists and performers are begging God to allow them to be submitted there and finish. So I remember, I don't think so that, this is sad to say, because similar situation I had with my daughter when she got accepted to USC. The schools are expensive. Living in New York, I cannot even imagine. I remember you coming to me, and not like you had amazing help, financial help, but dream was big. So you had a choice: forget about your dream, accept another school, or just do everything in your power to just get there and figure it out how you can live life in New York and how you can go through the journey of being a student in this amazing, amazing school. Yeah. So, and I remember the conversation, and I'm like, no, girl, go for the dream. This all will work out, easy said than done. But you did it. So tell us, if some parents listen to us and say, oh my gosh, my child got to this amazing private school, I don't know how
I'll... How will I do it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think so. You had a lot of help, financial help from your family, and you needed to probably work very hard to work on that. So tell us, you got accepted. And you had all this problem. How does this started? How did you came live in New York for so many years and survive on your own?
I mean, it was even a harder decision from the perspective of my parents, because I got a scholarship, a theater scholarship, to go to any UC school, any California school, and have a free year of tuition and room and board. And
we had the same situation. We had no money, but then it was a very hard situation. And then she got accepted to good schools in California. And then the dream, USC, the dream of her life popped up, and like, how we can figure out. So how did you figure it out?
Well, and I, the thing I was going to say was sort of putting those things next to each other. I had a dream. I really wanted to go to New York. I really felt like, you know, I had this vision that that's where real serious acting training happened in the US. And I wanted to be inspired by being surrounded by so much theater in New York. And actually during my time in LA, there was so much great theater in these like small, small black box theaters. And I was like, people just don't know enough about like how amazing some of the theater in Los Angeles is. So I thought, if I just get out to New York and I train there and I learn everything about it, maybe even there's a day where I, go to LA and, be a part of theater there. But when I made the decision, it was really, just telling my parents, like, I know that this is what I'm supposed to do. I know this is where I'm supposed to go. Ultimately they were supportive. They said, look, we only have this amount of money, so you're going to have to figure it out. And I had to apply to scholarships and grants, and there's a lot of work. It wasn't,
you are right, but obviously the grants and sponsorship and stuff, they don't come easily for the people who have no talent, but they come in some amazing magical way to people who are very talented and persistent. So what I found out at USC, they right away figure out how great student and how serious student my daughter is. I'm sure the same with you, the way how you receive your grants, because you represent talent and strength and the dream that was something for the school worth to keep you in and saying, go girl, whatever we can do, how much we can help, we are there for you. But outside of grants, you were studying in the morning and doing your stuff and acting, and then probably you needed to get some job. So did you had some unusual jobs that most of actors say, God, I was doing this.
Of course I did. You know, I have never been a server or a bartender. And I think that's very strange for an actor, especially like an actor doing theater in New York. I somehow never did those. I don't know why, but I was a nanny for a long time. And that was, oh my gosh, I have a lot of stories.
stories. This is, I think the show is so uplifting. Like I mentioned again, if you can make something of yourself and you just do with this beautiful smile, look at you, how happy you are. And parents need to also believe and trust the children that if they see the power in them, that they want to achieve something, they will probably figure out, and the world also will help them, because it's like, calling is from the top. I believe is something is outside of us also that leads us. The dreams are inside of us, but the power of dream comes from outside the world in pushing us in and saying we can do it.
So, and I know you must have been this way with your daughter too, but you know, my parents also really instilled in me, you will have to work hard, and it's not just going to, you know, drop in your lap, and you will have to, you know, work these other jobs, and you will have to pound the pavement. And I think, you know, something about moving to a place like New York when you're that young, it's even going to college there, it's not like a typical college experience. You know, there isn't, NYU at least doesn't have a campus really. It's not, the dorms are sort of, you know, my first dorm there was an apartment, converted apartment building in Chinatown. And it was, you know, packed with tourists all the time on the weekends. And it was, you know, just the hustle and bustle of all of that. It was like, you're gonna have to sort of figure out how to be a grown-up here. No one's really holding your hands at a school like that or in a city like that. It's like, all right, we're going to treat you like a professional, and like, hopefully you can find your way to becoming a professional and doing.
You were barely 18 going 19. So saying goodbye to young, a girl like that, to the big town that you didn't know, like you say, like Natasha, my daughter, she didn't have the maturity, so she, because it cost a lot of money. So for first 2 years, she was driving 3 hours to USC from place where we are going back and forth. She was stopping in a restaurant where she was a waitress. Then she was in a mall working something else as a salesperson. Then in a third year, she got a great job that really helped her to make some money, and people loved her there and gave her a little bit business sense of that she could be also a businesswoman. So, you know, is everything builds us, you know, like you said, you have so many stories when you were babysitting somebody else's children. So everything gives us the power and strength, I think, to saying, yes, we can do it, we can do it, we can do it.
Almost a very long time, I was working a job that I thought was going to be like a temp job, you know, and they wanted me to stay on and said, we understand that you're in an unusual circumstance. We understand you have like a whole other life. And I really learned that to be honest about that with people, to say, you know, this is my number one focus, but when I'm here and when I'm working for you, when I'm working with you, I will give you like completely my utmost, you know, I will do my best. I care deeply about whatever I'm working on. And I'm really efficient. So you're lucky because I'll get all of this work done. Whatever you give me, I'll get it all done. And then I have to go do like a completely other life. And they really, this company that I worked for a lot of years, really understood that. I had a specific boss who was so supportive. Her name was Valerie, was really, really supportive. And I found that was kind of the key to survival, was being really honest about what it is that your focus is with people, and also like dedicating, you know, giving all of yourself to whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever.
But also finding these little angels along the way.
I love you for saying that. But because again, this, like I say, it's so important to put accent on people who are helpful, and they in the unusual moment of the life just appear, and you don't even know why they appear on your way, and somehow made this easier. And I am the most optimistic person because I just believe in good in people, and I'm the same way. I was like, oh my gosh, if I can help, I put myself in so much trouble, and then I'm like, why did I do this? I leave somebody else's problem right now. I want them to achieve what they dream about, or help them together. How can I help? It takes time. But the angels, small angels, then make the life worth living, and they can help artists like you, artists like Natasha, even myself for so many years in America, to keep us dream and keep us to become who we are. So again, we are talking to our beautiful Jessica O'Hara Baker, and she is an actor based from Copenhagen, New York, California. She's a director, she's a producer, voiceover artist, and a singer, which I'm adding with big, big strength push because you are an amazing singer. So my question will be, what's it like being, you call this, I'm reading this question because it's very cool, multidisciplinary artist. What do you mean by that? You little told us a little bit, but yes, explain that. You have so many things in your hands when you are describing who you are.
Yeah, I think, so to me, being a multidisciplinary artist means acknowledging at some point in your path that one thing only isn't going to fulfill like what you feel like your actual artistry is, what you feel like your full artistry is. And I think I thought like, I'm an actor, that's what I want to do. And, you know, put my head down and trained and studied and worked hard and started to realize I had these other skill sets. And I think it was mostly that other people started to identify it to me. You know how sometimes you need someone else to kind of tell you.
It will be good to do something, or we would love you to be part of something. So we are talking, this will be my next question, the collaboration and making this new project very exciting because of people that you brought to the project, or they invited you to be part of their project. So you say by being a multidisciplinary artist, you need to really find strength in you to focus on many different aspects of your job and still do equally great on any level?
Yeah.
What is the fear that you can do it? Is it fear or is it like, I can do it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there are times where it's like, that's just who I am and there's not even a question. So there's no fear because it's just a fact, you know? But there are definitely times where if I've only focused on one thing and not another for a long stretch, I start to feel that itch of like, oh gosh, I need to switch gears. I need to focus on this aspect of my career and not that one. And I worked with someone who said a really lovely thing. I'll never forget. She said, you know, to be an artist focusing on even just the focusing on your artistry versus your career, right? Like those are two different things.
Wow.
Keep training. You're never done training. You're always still growing. You're always still working. But then also the networking and career stuff. And those are two different skills too. That's being a business person and being an artist. That it's like jazz, where you go watch live jazz and you know there's a drum solo.
Improvisations, yes.
Yeah, and like right now it's the drums solo and you just like sink into that and you love that, and then the trumpet's coming up soon and that's going to have its solo, and that there's a little bit of faith actually to right now this is a season where I'm working more on this particular aspect of my career, but I'm still training, I'm still growing, I'm still working on the artistry of a different aspect of my career, and I'm sort of ready for when this season is over to focus all in on this other part of it as well.
Beautiful, so, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful set. So now you're this great young producer. Mm. We are talking about producing movies, producing last 2 years, COVID, we'll talk about COVID, but before COVID, I'm sure you had already projects that were very, very serious. Then we had the COVID period. So please you tell us how you survived through that. And now I know 2 months ago, I was so hoping to be part of your promotion for, you know, your big event that you had 2 weeks ago. So tell us everything. Mm. Before COVID, how was your life? What projects really made you become a producer? Film producer, or you know, stage, whatever you were doing, then COVID, surviving COVID. And now, you know, you are again thriving. So please.
Yeah. So before the pandemic, I had started a few years ago a film collective with my partner Jean Goto, called Burn It Down Film Collective. And we started by producing basically these monthly and then eventually bi-monthly workshops for people who identified as filmmakers who wanted to learn aspects of filmmaking they weren't as comfortable with. So if I was an actor who thought, gosh, I just want to write a film for myself. I want to write a sort of a vehicle for myself, but I don't know enough about filmmaking. I need to learn more. You could come to these workshops. Or if you were a director, we had people who had actually directed many, many times before, but they thought, I still really need to learn more about lenses and sort of the art of a cinematography and filmmaking from that perspective, the more technical perspective. They could come to these workshops and practice being the cinematographer on a particular project and learning a little more about that. So we started this a few years ago, and then right before the pandemic, at the end of 2019, I guess summer, fall of 2019, we launched a new wing of that collective called the Production Wing. And the idea of that was to select a sort of hand-selected group of people and say, for one season, we're a production company, and only for one season, because these are people who all have their own flourishing careers. Everyone's very busy working on what they're working on. But we thought we can get this really talented group of people together.
Yes.
Say one season, we're like a production company. We're going to produce two, what we called film festival level quality of films. And on each film, the group gets to sort of do a different aspect of filmmaking. What's one thing that you're kind of already really trained in, that you're, you know, talented in, that you work as, and what's one thing that would be new, that you sort of have a knowledge gap and you want to learn something about? So that meant on each film, somebody, you know, there were enough people that were sort of holding down what they really knew about, and a part of the group that was getting to learn something that was really valuable to them. And the pandemic plunked right in the middle of that season, because we shot our first of the two films in January of 2020. And we just went into pre-production for the second film that was supposed to be in, I think we were going to shoot in April or May of 2020, sort of a blur now. And so we just shot it last month in October of 2021. We did it. I'm so proud of us
In the meantime, the COVID time really got you still, or you had the chance to create something when you were lagging home. I also want to add that you are a mama, you're a mother. So
I did create something kind of massive.
You created a masterpiece, and a lot of young mothers and fathers, the worst of COVID, we know what was, but the best part of the pandemic was when kept us in home, that we could also focus a little bit more on family and being closer to our children, to our spouses or families, whatever. So did you use this time as creative break, or you were going crazy for part of the COVID, knowing, oh my gosh, what I will do? For artists, that was the hardest profession to be in, because nothing was working. But eventually, I have a lot of beautiful interviews with filmmakers on my show too, before you. And they were saying how many great things in their mind came to life because of the break that was allowed. Everybody was allowed to take, because they had no choice. They needed to take a break and rethink life. And nobody knew how long will be the situation. So do you have any memory of something cool that came to your mind and creative process that was yours, completely yours, fresh, unusual, and say without bad, horrible situation, pandemic? I probably will never think about that.
Yeah. There was something I really wanted to create, gosh, like several years ago, maybe 2017 or 2018, I started to get these ideas for a project, and I couldn't even really wrap my head around what I wanted it to be at the time. Was it a live event? Was it something that would be sort of filmed or recorded? But I wanted to gather multidisciplinary artists to create pieces based on a theme. And I had this journal, I just started writing. It was one of those things where you have an idea for something and you don't know what it's gonna be, and you just give yourself permission, like, whatever, I don't know what it's gonna be. I'm just gonna keep letting myself, anytime I have an idea about it, I'm gonna write it down. And I called it In Here, Out There. And started finding myself saying, what I want to do is investigate the experience of being in the world inside of our own minds, inside of our own experiences, versus being in the world with other people and in community and in collaboration. And what's that like, that sort of duality that we have? And so anyway, last year with the pandemic was the first time I actually had, you know, because I mostly work in theater, actually, theater stopped altogether, right? For a period of time there was no theater. And the projects that I had lined up to direct had all stopped. I thought, well, you know what? I actually have time to do this, whatever this idea was that I thought I was going to do. I'm going to pull out my old journal. I'm going to look at this and see what I want this to be, because maybe other people, other artists also have a little bit of time on their hands or want to explore this kind of strange idea that I have. And it birthed this, what I called like a multidisciplinary digital arts zine, which kind of is like those zines from the 90s where they would have, you know, these scrap things, and it was physical, it was paper. Yeah. But I was inspired by, there was a series called The New Yorker Presents on Amazon Prime. And I think they did this beautiful job of taking the New Yorker magazine and bringing it to life through film, through audio, through visual, through animation, in this really, really lovely way, short films. And I was sort of inspired by that and these old, you know, sort of Riot Girl digital, you know, I'm sorry, not digital, analog zines of the 90s, and thought, I think I know people who maybe do one thing with their life. You know, they're a theater performer who might have like a sort of another little skill. I love when people have like their secret little like hidden talents and things that maybe they want to put toward this. And, so yeah, I produced this digital zine that, gosh, it was a really exciting at that time, because this was starting in March and April of 2020. And it connected me with so many artists all over the world, people I didn't know. I have a friend, Tasha Halevi, who just kept getting ideas for like, you need to meet this person, and sending me emails and phone numbers and messages of, yeah, you know. Cute. And so I'm meeting, you know, artists located in Greece and LA and Morocco and, you know, Spain and all over the world. Just really, really exciting to see what people were processing at that time and the kind of art that came out of them.
Yeah, that's a very, very creative way of looking at, I would never do anything like this. Ahead of time, I reach out, and an expansion is so big that reach out all around the world and brings all my similar-minded people like you together, and they're in different places. But what we find out that humans are thinking, feeling, hoping, dreaming very similar way everywhere. And what you are saying, sometimes we have our professions, but deep inside we have something that we forgot, covered, we didn't want to go there deeper, and because for whatever reason, but we are finding ourselves in the moments that was given to us or in the future, and we maybe our life will change for better or take completely different direction. But the fear is always, oh, I don't want to ruin something what I already know and go into something that I don't discover. I had this beautiful interview with the Joanne de Vault. She's the art dealer. She has her own beautiful gallery that people can go on a website, and it's artist title. And obviously I was working with her many years ago. She was for almost 15 years exclusively in music business, but on the side, she was an artist. She was a painter. She was always enjoying this type of the work and artistry. And then she said, okay, so long I was working for somebody else, for corporation, and bringing somebody else art to the front. Why I, in the time of COVID, why I will not focus now on myself, what I always wanted to do, to just bring the picking artists, painters, everything, and create a gallery that people can come and see my taste, what I want to represent, what is really deeply me, what I want to be surrounded, and what, who I believe in. The same, I think, so creative. Never she will do it because she had a great job and secure job, and now she is working for herself. So it's a big courage. But I think that's what life is, very, very special, if people will take the step. And with us being an artist, we have this chance almost every time working on something else, because we are like symbiosis. We are part of somebody else's career, somebody else's idea. But then is the moment of time that you say, me, what I want to do, what I want to bring to the table, that people will say, that's my creativity, my creation. So I think you have this in your hands. You had a great school. You are surrounded by very, very good artists. You have the connection, and now you are producing. So we know that 2 months ago, you can tell us about the premiere, because a week ago you just finished. Can you tell us what you were doing in New York?
Sure. Yes. I went out to New York to direct a workshop production of a new play by a playwright called Ben Furkey, and it was called I Am the Goose King, about a conspiracy theorist, sort of similar to like a QAnon conspiracy theorist, and a journalist who's interviewing him. And it was a really interesting process, and interesting to go back to, you know, kind of the beginning of opening New York theater back up again. Is really what this fall season is. And I directed something here in Copenhagen in August and September, and just simply directing in those two places back to back, it's very different. It's the experience is different, and what, you know.
Do you think the public has different tastes, European public or Americans public? Do you think people say, sorry, Europeans are more deep. They feel deeper, they like harder issues, they are less consumption oriented. So most of art has the layers of, we are thinking one, but really is another layer. So people like to discover that. So do you see that or really not? Or really you think that, you know, public feels the same way? What I serve in a way in New York will be very well received in Copenhagen, or if I take Copenhagen production, bring to New York, will people really receive the same with the same, you know, passion or excitement? Or there are two different audiences?
Yeah, no, I think that's such an interesting question. I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's so universal that we love stories about the human experience. You know, no matter what, we love storytelling, no matter the culture, and being sort of, I think, in theater in particular, being challenged a little bit. You know, when you show up to theater, especially sort of, I think if you're going to something that's like, it's a new play, it's a, you know, super contemporary something, you're expecting a little bit to be challenged with your own thoughts and ideas. And I think that's true no matter what. But certainly working in New York, I thought it was funny that there are certain shorthand like words or jokes or things like that that I, you know, I acknowledged when I was directing here in Copenhagen. I would say these sort of colloquialisms or these little slang words that I was like, oh, anybody knows what I'm talking about.
So that's very, very cool. You know, you need to think this way. It's like a promoting movie to different markets. You know, you still need to understand what market will need, and do they really understand even title, you know, the same way how we do. So it's very interesting, because we went with my daughter in London, we saw Romeo and Juliet, and we thought, okay, that's great. We'll see Shakespeare, we'll see everything, how it's supposed to be done. Oh my gosh, it was the most modern production that I ever saw. So it was shocking, because everybody was in normal clothes. Everything was like, you know, in this day, turning to this day, and conversation and shopping bags and toilet papers in their hands. And you know, it was like, what the music from big band music, from New Orleans music, from Hello, you know, Lionel Richie even sung inside of performance. I'm like, am I part of? I was like, I don't know if I like that. I don't know if Shakespeare will like when he wakes up and say, what did you do to me? This is not fair. But there was like 500 people standing inside of the theater, because it was one of the oldest part of the London and theater, we were sitting in funny place, then stage was around, so actors were walking all around too, and music was everywhere, but nobody moved. Everything was like, there were young people, 12, 13 years old, standing because there was not so, enough of seats. And people were mesmerized by this, and acting and singing and dancing. Nothing did you expect of Shakespeare, nothing did you expect of Romeo and Juliet. And you know what? I cried in the same parts, like in a movie, you know, when you read. I laughed in lots of places, probably similar. And overall, when we left, I'm like, okay, I liked it. I really like it, you know. But in time of the show, I was like, what am I? What I see, you know, girl running in the shorts and just, what is this? But what he's saying, the story, love, betrayal, everything was really like today. You could feel it, the pain, you can feel, you know, family issues, problems, everything. And they were coming out of the messages in between of the show. There was message about depression, about suicide, about, it was so unusual. I'm giving you ideas. So maybe you need to go to the link, maybe right. Something, because you know, very, very, very cool. You can really make announcement. You can make a world being aware of something that was included in the art, but focus is like outside of the theater, but not in time of performance. That makes absolutely. You think deeper. So, you know, you are in an amazing part of the industry. I am so proud of you. And so in a sweet way, you make me also think how to fly, because like you said, we never stop creating artists and never ever ending story of creativity. So what will be the next? Now you're in Copenhagen. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so I'm here back and forth for a little while. My husband's going to graduate school here and we've got family here. And oh my gosh. And it's a really, really great place to have a kid, because that was the other thing I created during the pandemic. And it's just, it's really lovely. And going back to New York last month, I thought, I really love that I feel at home in both of these places right now. And I wasn't sure that coming back to Copenhagen, I would feel that way, because, you know, this whole time it's been like, oh, I can't wait to get back to New York. That's been my home for so, so long. But they both feel really exciting. And here I've been doing a lot of directing and teaching and leading workshops. And I think that's opening up my eyes in a way to, you know, because it's English language work that I'm doing here in Denmark, I'm meeting people from all over the world who've come to Copenhagen and who are interested in the arts. And it's so exciting that everyone's got a different perspective, because in the US, obviously, we're very like New York and LA, right?
Absolutely. Like,
and
that's what I didn't want to say, because obviously I'm European, but I was almost 30 years in America and I love America so much, gave me all the best too. And obviously my daughter. So, but she brought me back to Europe, who would think, you know, she was in London. So she loves Europe equally to America, or even now more, because that's her life, but changes your perspective. So when you become part of European lifestyle and the community that you call Europe, the countries are so close together and different perspective, like you say, different points of view, different art, different nuances are coming to the place, that you cannot be the same person when you sit in established parts like New York, which we know what is art, theater, New York theater, film industry, LA, you know, we have this like predisposition. We think that we already know what is expected of us. Mm-hmm. But here, people are like, hey, bring something to the table. Who you are, mix and match, do your things. And I think you will be amazed. And I know you already think about this, what the next is happening, you know, for you in Europe. I don't want to say that you probably wind up living in Europe, probably half and half, because that's how life goes. You just never know what will happen, where the real opportunity and the passion will keep you for longer, especially that you have family. That's what your husband is doing.
So he's doing lighting design. He's a sound designer for lots of years. Actually, I don't think I've ever told you this. He was an audio engineer for film and television for a decade. And yeah, so now he's doing lighting design. He wants to kind of round out his technical knowledge. So he could be a technical director of a theater if he wanted to, or just sort of opening up his options. But he's been doing a lot of museum lighting design here in Europe, which is very
cool. You know, like I say, the amazing parts of the towns that you can create theater performances that they allowed here, you know, so you can see also Europe as an open theater, you know, nights and parks. And we have so many places that you have small amphitheater that people are coming under the sky and they are, you know, seeing great art, operas. And it's just so not like in America.
Yeah, it's a different context. I think you're so right that especially doing theater in New York for so long, you sort of think of what the industry standards are and the sort of what the path looks like. And being here, it's been really exciting to see everyone's goals. I led a career workshop at some point last year and was talking to actors, not just actors, actually, there were writers and directors there as well. But, you know, asking people, what are your career goals? What do you need to do to help achieve those? And I was just blown away by so many people from different places and what their contexts for what their career success would look like. It's really just opened my mind up a lot. And I obviously don't want to stop working in New York. I continue to have projects lined up out there, but I'm excited to add to that, you know, this European market, which is, I mean, it's crazy to even say European. There's so many different communities. It's really not one thing. And that's so exciting.
And theater is something that Europe loves. And look at the London. I don't know, please, anytime when you've been in London, let's come and have a grab the tea or whatever we'll grab. And, but you know, on one street, you have 10, 5, 7, the biggest theaters with performances going, you know, so expensive and so beautiful. I just cannot wait also to be part of this life because of COVID, we couldn't. But now, yes, everything opened up. So we are already lining up.
What theater in London is so good.
It's so good. And it's so close to you, baby. It's so close. Obviously, you can do the same in London and look for people who can bring you to do whatever you want to do. Let's talk about singing, because I need to say your voice is beautiful. You had always very good taste in music. So seeing you a little bit, you put on your website, thank you so much, some part of your life singing, which that's also very impressive. And that's what singers, if they're good, they are not afraid to put live performing. So tell me, when you were studying, did you ever work as a singer also? Or please tell me that will make me happy, because I was
I have to say that I remember coming to you and saying, you know, I don't know if I was unusual, because I just wanted to sing like sad Billie Holiday songs. Yep. And you were like, girl, come on, we gotta sing like some pop, we gotta sing some upbeat.
because you're old soul, so I knew it, that you will always be good with what is inside of your soul. But I knew that life sometimes is like, hey, you will need to make money, so please expand your you know, pop singing, especially when you go to New York. I know how much I work abroad singing only in a way for money, in a great venues, great hotels. But that's what they were bringing me to, with bands, to just entertain people. And 90% of songs I really would never pick for me to sing. Yeah. But when I did good job, people had good time. And then I very fast understood that I'm here to serve. Many times, yes, when I create my own songs, that's me. But when you are performing, giving yourself into the people, they better have good time, you know, give them something what they came for. So I was very happy that you also, outside of you being on the stage in LA and in a lot of cute, very good performances after in high school, and you were always involved in that way, you start singing also lighter, you know, stuff. So you say that you were singing, baby. Yes, you were singing.
I was, yeah. And so what I learned with you actually came in handy, because when right after I graduated college, I started getting some commercial jingles jobs, you know, singing vocals for commercial jingles. So of course you need that sort of light, airy, poppy voice for those. And it was funny because I think I would come in. I learned a lot doing things like that. I'd hear the music and I'd sort of do it in my, you know, deep and raspy way. And they'd be like, okay, great. We're going to need lighter. Throw that away. We're going to need something a little more light and airy, you know. But it taught me a lot about my voice and how the different ways that I could use my singing voice, depending on the context. And, you know, I think I had this thing in my head of, well, but my voice is just one, my singing voice is one kind of way. And I'll sing this one kind of music. And you really opened up my eyes to, I mean, you made me try everything. I remember we were singing country music and you were making me rap and you were making me do pop. And, yeah. And I'm actually a good rapper. I rap for my friends for birthday gifts usually.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but you could rap for us or you don't, but you maybe one day you'll send us something and I would love to present it because maybe it's something in you that you can start creating your album of taste of Jessica, you know, so yeah, why not? You know, the singing, I think you are a great singer. You have the soul for singing. So I would love to include in our interview, in the end of our interview, visuals from your live performing. I'm not sure that Facebook and Instagram will allow us to be added because sometimes they are just blockading. They say, no, you have no performance rights to show this song or that song. So I will be putting this in the end of the show, but whole world who listens to Accent on LA Talk Radio, Accent on London Edition, they will be hearing you singing the wonderful duo. Do you remember who was the gentleman that was singing with you?
Oh, of course. He's the incredibly talented Neil Tyrone Pritchard. He is an actor and singer based in New York and part of the Labyrinth Theater community and just a very, very sweet, wonderful human being. Yeah.
So we better talk to him and say, you know what? This is the beginning of something. We need to create small CDs, 6 songs together. Duo. Yeah. So, you know, and maybe that would be the project that you can do an MP.
Yeah, and actually that performance that you're going to play a clip of was a really great example of one of those fear moments in life. You know, you were asking before about, are there times where you have this fear? And for both Neil and I at that time, we were like, we were both singers. It's such a big part of who we are. We haven't been sort of owning it in a way for different reasons. You know, we have different career paths, but we haven't been owning it in a way that we feel like it's authentic to us or like we're putting ourselves out there. So I said, why don't we just make our own little night of a cabaret and see if people would want to come? And then it was like, well, it was really beautiful. It was a full house. And I think we both learned a lot as well, putting that together. And we did some duets, we did some solos and.
Think about it, because I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to really for you to focus a little bit on your singing talent. It's a big one, it's a good one. And with your beautiful education and your career right now, I'm sure what you pick to sing, they will be having meaning for you, which means people who receive they will feel the same way because I really believe you give something special, people receive in a special way. And it would be just very, very nice to do it. I will also add your demo reel, you know, so everybody who will be listening to the audio on LA Talk Radio, there will be some moment of silence, but then we'll be hearing your beautiful voice. So I think it's nice for people to also hear your dialogues with somebody. It's very short, but I would love to include it too. But for people who are watching our video, they will have chance to see your beautiful face and they will see you and hear everything what we are talking about and then can put face behind the action. So tell me, you have a son, yes?
I do. His name's Elliot.
Oh, of course, Elliot. And beautiful. So do you think you see some talent in him already, performing talent?
Oh my gosh.
He's a dancer, he sings, he's doing comedy, everything.
You know what, Ilona? He is hilarious. He's so funny. And when he was in the womb, I thought, I don't know why, but I feel like he's making jokes sometimes. Like, I feel like he's funny. You know, the first one actually was when we went to see the ultrasound appointment and they were saying, do you want to know what the sex of the baby is? And we said, sure, why not? And she said, oh, well, actually, he's peeing right now. Whoop! And it was a big rainbow.
That's so sweet. He wanted to say, I'm excited, Mom.
Yes. Like, I think he just made his first joke. And then, oh my gosh. I mean, since he's been born, and now he's 14 months. So
his
personality is really developing.
Talking and running around and having power to do all. Hopefully you have grandparents who are probably so lucky to have you in Copenhagen. So you need help. We all need to, any help we can get.
He understands. He understands humor. And I definitely see that in him. Yeah.
So I want to remind our listeners and people who are watching us that we are talking to Jessica O'Hara Baker. So she's an actor, she's a producer, she is a woman, she's mother, she is wife, she is a creative person. And I think please go to her website, jessicaoharabaker.com. And when you click on this link, what you will see, New York Times, she's genuinely exciting to watch. Manhattan with a twist. She's electrifying to watch. And her presence is missed in the few moments she is off stage. Next, Times Square Chronicles. Jessica O'Hara Baker is absolutely stunning. Jessica, I want to cry. Congratulations. I love you so much. I'm so happy to see you. Looking identically like 18 years ago, whatever we saw last time. Say hi to your parents, and I'm so thankful that they believed in you and they made everything happen for you in the beginning. And then I am thankful for you that you made everything for yourself happening in the classy way, old soul way, like I knew you will be. And we are so close to each other. So anytime when you are in, of course, London, and when I will see for the first time with my daughter Copenhagen, she never been there yet, so we'll come over, we'll have a great whatever tea or coffee, and we'll see what life will bring. But love and like alive is just something so special, and you are part of my journey, and I'm so proud to be part of your journey.
Thank you
you so much for today, and I will say LA Talk Radio, London edition, Accent On, loves you and is very proud of you, and good luck to you in 2022.
Thank you so much, Ilona.
Every day is something new, girl, to keep me loving you, girl. And with every passing minute, so much joy wrapped up in it. Heaven must descend you from above. Ooh, heaven must descend your precious love.
And now, that's how Tammy does it. I've got a song to sing, telling the world about the joy you bring. Ooh, and you taught me the meaning of living, 'cause ooh, ooh, you taught me the meaning of giving.
Can return, but honey, I have so much to learn.
Yeah, I wanna show my appreciation, 'cause meeting you meant a whole new inspiration. Oh. Hey. precious
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.